Heard the call to build your small business? Make it happen with a .net domain name, the place for dreamers for 30 years and counting. Visit keepdreamingup.net for tips and advice, whether you're just getting started or looking to grow. That's keepdreamingup.net.
You are Locked On Pelicans, your daily podcast on the New Orleans Pelicans, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to another edition of Locked On Pelicans, the only daily podcast covering your favorite team, the New Orleans Pelicans, and NBA as a whole, available on iTunes, on Audioboom, wherever podcasts are found. I'm your host, Jake Madison, at NolaJake on Twitter. Excited to be with you all here on this Wednesday, day after the first preseason game. We get to talk about actual basketball today, and that is just awesome, really. Finally, like actual on-court stuff, not projections, not wondering what's going to happen, but actually talking about what occurred, what we can take away from it. And basically, we're just going to spend this episode breaking down the Pelicans' 113-109 loss to the Chicago Bulls after a pretty dismal fourth quarter, and end of third quarter, to be honest as well. But it's not as bad as it seems, and I'm going to let you know why. And this has to do with the coaching staff, their approach to everything, and how it translated to what you saw on the court. So today's edition of Locked On Pelicans, just going to fully break everything down from you. There's a surprising amount to take away, especially after the Pelicans put up just an absolute ton of points in the first half. I think they scored 69 in the first half, 46 in the first quarter, with some very good looking offense. But there are a lot of concerns. Did those concerns lead to them losing the game, though, is the real question. So all that and more in today's edition of Locked On Pelicans. So to talk about the game, we actually need to go back before the game, and this echoes something Alvin Gentry said a couple of times over the past week and a half, and that's how condensed this preseason training camp situation is for the team. Back now that the NBA has moved up the regular season, rather than starting, say, around Halloween night, it's moved up a couple of, like a week and a half to the 17th for the Pelicans, I think, is the opening night game against Memphis on the road. That's significant, and that time now is lost from preseason and training camp. And with the Pels only playing four games, and their final preseason game is against the Memphis Grizzlies, where Coach Gentry has basically said, they're not doing much. You're not going to see much from that. So they essentially have three preseason games to try and figure out a lot of things to integrate some new players and some new offensive systems to this team. It's a concern. You get basically a week of training camp, then kind of 2 weeks of preseason. That's really it, if that. And then you're right in the regular season, and we all know this team needs to get off to at least a 500 start to remain competitive, and you know, hopefully for all these guys to keep their jobs. I was lucky to speak with Pelicans assistant coach McMillan before the game, and asked him about it as well. And he said, yeah, you know, they are integrating a lot of new pieces. That makes things very difficult. He was actually very excited to go up against this Bulls team that, he didn't say this, but obviously we all know they weren't exactly super talented when it comes to the roster. But he did say they were hungry and young and they wanted to get out there. And it's a good test for the Pelicans, who've only been practicing against themselves. And after a while, that does get a little bit stale. And, you know, the Bulls have, say, an advantage in this training camp and preseason. They have six preseason games. Pels basically have three. So that's going to lead to what Alvin Gentry said the other day of seeing the starters play significantly more than you might have expected. He said the 24 to 28 range. We'll get it right one day. But we saw them go over that. We saw Davis and Cousins each play 33 minutes. Rondo got 31, and Drew Holiday got 30. Those are pretty high numbers for the first preseason game, let alone the fact that these guys did it in three quarters, essentially. There's a bit of a concern. You can make the case that was too much for them. But frankly, they're NBA players. I think they can handle playing 30 minutes in three quarters if they really need to. So I think it's definitely going to be an okay thing. But this is how they're going to be using preseason. They need to get some work in with these guys to just kind of get some live action training and reps with this team and to see it against players that aren't on the Pelicans. So there's a lot of complaining about that. And so really the way we need to evaluate this game is based off of those first three quarters. That fourth quarter where those guys were sitting are far less important than it would have been had they been in there. Right now we're not as concerned if all of these players aren't, you know, if Davis and Cousins, I cannot speak today, I'm sorry, if Davis and Cousins aren't in the game, it's okay. It's not the end of the world. But those first, you know, three quarters are pretty telling, and for a while, it was pretty damn exciting if you're a Pelicans fan. The Pelicans' first quarter where they put up 46 points was really something. Like, I was excited. I was all bought in. You saw ball movement. You saw open three-point looks and people letting it fly from there. And more importantly, and this is what I want to focus on to start with, you saw some really, really good court spacing from the Pelicans. This is an area everyone's been worried about, and we weren't sure if this was going to go very well for the team. With two bigs like this that you need to create some room for them to work down low, and a bunch of three-point shooters that no one truly believes in, that no one really feels are threats. And the question is, how are you going to space the court for these bigs? And most recently, I think everyone's just kind of arrived on the idea of, well, they're going to kind of space the court themselves. I've been pushing this notion for a little while as well, saying you need to look at the Spanish national team offense in the Eurobasket tournament to see how two bigs that have very unique skill sets and are not traditional bigs, like hulking centers below the rim, these are guys who have guard skills and perimeter shooting abilities, and how they can space the court for each other. And you saw that. Basically, one of Davis or Cousins was on the perimeter at all times. And while we want to hate that, it's kind of the answer here, and it's the way we've got to kind of look at this Pelicans team, because who else is really going to do all that? So, you know, it works because Cousins is a good three-point shooter and Davis is a good three-point shooter. And when you looked at the court and looked for where those white jerseys were, which the Pelicans were wearing, they were, frankly, on the perimeter. There was one guy in the paint and that was it. And it was usually Davis or Cousins, followed by potentially other cutters later on. But to start a set, the spacing looked really good. And if they got the ball to Cousins on the free throw line or the elbow where he really likes to get the ball, he had room to put it on the ground, put it on the floor and drive to the rim very easily too. He scored a number of buckets that way, and it was very impressive. He had on the night, where are my numbers here? 20 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, a block, and things looked really good. And it worked. You could see it with Davis on the perimeter, and he hit on the night a 3-pointer. He took 5 attempts, by the way. That's how much he's trying to shoot from deep and make defenses respect him. Even if he's not a good three-point shooter, if you take enough shots from there and you hit enough of them, even without being good, it forces a defense to account for you. That's more important at times than actually making the shots, because it can open up room for others. I've been trying to hammer this point home for the past couple of weeks here. And they're trying to do that. All of these guys are starting to take enough threes. Rondo took 3 attempts. Holiday had 3 attempts. Cousins had 3 attempts. Cunningham only had 2. That's the one thing you'd like to change. Each one more, though, took 6. Ian Clark took 3. These guys are out there actively trying. Darius Miller took 3. That's the other guy here. Actively trying to space the court and do the right thing for these bigs. And when it's working, you saw it with the first quarter last night. Yeah, they hit 71% or something like that from 3 in the first quarter, so that's going to balloon that number and points-wise up. But overall, look at the other ways they scored. Davis and Cousins had room to work down low. They weren't constantly double or triple team because the Pelicans had players on the perimeter. And that's awesome. You didn't always see that last year or the year before that or any of the years before that this team has had Davis. And it worked really well. It gave you a glimpse of how things could work. It allowed Cousins to be at that free throw line, get the ball and kind of survey, and then people cut around him. And they were able to make it, not magic happen, I guess. But, you know, these guys are going to have room because you have people standing on the three-point line that even if they're not great shooters, are willing to shoot. And it led to a lot of success. And again, 46 points in a quarter, even against this kind of bad Bulls lineup, was still very impressive. Before we get to the bad, and there was definitely a lot of bad, by the way, and I want to touch on that certainly here. Make sure you're listening to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast. I know you guys have your drafts coming up. I've got my fantasy league draft coming up soon. You want every advantage where you can win your money and have bragging rights over your friends. Josh Lloyd and the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast is the best way to do it. Check out his work. He updates his projections and everything daily. So you are on, you know, the bleeding edge of everything. You know what's going on. You're going to be up to date. He'll give you every advantage you can to, like I said, win your money and have bragging rights over your friends in your fantasy basketball league. So make sure you definitely tune into the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast.
Daddy, where do babies come from?
Honey?
Mommy went to the store.
Oh, well, you see, there's a mommy and a daddy, right?
Right.
And see, when they call Geico, they could save a bunch of money on car insurance.
Oh, really? And that makes them happy?
Yes, that makes them very happy.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we could have this talk, Sunshine.
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
All right, so I've changed my mind because I want to be optimistic and happy before we talk about the bad, and let's just keep rolling with the good for a moment. One of the things you saw, particularly in the first half and even part of the third quarter when things bogged down a little bit, and that's where things started to go poorly for the Pelicans, but certainly in the first half, you saw the increased ball movement for the Pelicans and what they were hoping for, and a lot more cutters and everything. And this shows up in the stats where... as I'm trying to pull up the first half numbers and my computer wants to go really slow here. But frankly, if you look at it, look at all the assist numbers that players had. So on the game, Davis had 3 assists, Cousins had 5, Rondo had 8, which is about what we expected. Holiday had 3, and he's playing in a very different role, so he's still getting used to that as much. And right now you can see he's definitely focused more on trying to score and drive than he is on trying to set up teammates. Holiday on the night had 11 points, which is okay. Did this in 30 minutes on 4 of 7 shooting. Had he hit another 3, let's say, that number jumps up to 14 and looks significantly better. So he had 3 assists. Where are the numbers here? Darius Miller had 2. That's another surprising guy. But when he was here in New Orleans, what he could do before, really better than any other skill that he had, was pass the ball around and keep things moving. Okay, here's the first half assist numbers. Davis with 2, Cousins with 3, Holiday 3, Rondo 3, Moore with 1, Miller with 1. That's a lot of people sharing the ball and passing. I don't have the advanced box score yet from the NBA.com/stats site. But overall, it gives you an idea that, yeah, the team's passing the ball a lot. These guys are moving around off ball a lot. You don't get assists unless the other guy scores. So the fact is, these guys are moving, they're getting the ball, and then they're converting those chances. I don't, you know, have anything to compare it to right now, but those are very good assist numbers for the Pelicans to start off in the first half for them. They had 13 assists on 21 makes. Think about that one for a second. 13 assists on 21 makes. Those are good numbers, folks. So I'm happy to see that. So kind of what Chris Finch had been preaching and what the Pelicans had wanted to be doing was showing up in the team's box score and on the court. And finally, you're starting to get an offense that really takes strong advantage of what the Pelicans have hoped to do. The other thing where you can see the Chris Finch influence is pull up the shot chart. There are basically 5 mid-range attempts. If you look at it, it's 3-pointers and things in the paint and 5 shots that are not in there. That's wonderful. And one of those shots from mid-range, as I'm looking at it now, was Cliff Alexander, who's not going to make the team. So it's really 4 shots outside of the paint and inside the 3-point line. So this team is really coming together. You can see these offensive principles that they're preaching: ball movement, better shot selection, simple things like that has already shown off itself in the first game. And when it comes to 3-point shooting, again, it was good. I'm happy with that. One of the things I just want to mention as kind of a funny joke and an aside here is early in the first half, I forget if it was the first quarter or the second quarter, Rondo hit a long 3, about 8 feet or so behind the 3-point line. And I think everyone in there is like, what the hell is going on? And as I was talking to Coach McMillan before the game, we saw Rondo taking long 3s. And I asked him, you know, why are you having him do this before games when he's never going to take a shot like this during the game? And basically said it's like when, since I know baseball's going on, I think there's some playoff games or something with that, where you've got a hitter in the batter's box and or in the on-deck circle, that's it, swinging the bat with those weights on there. It's to get their movement a little bit quicker so they swing quicker once those weights come off and the bat's lighter. Same idea here. He likened it to Drew Brees saying in practice, you want him throwing some long throws down the field, 50-yard passes, get that velocity up so that when he does throw, say, a 10-yard out route, that ball is coming out like a damn dart and it gets there. So this is just for Rondo to be taking long attempts to get kind of in that motion and knowing he needs to get some more strength on the ball, which lends me to believe that, you know, when he takes three-pointers, sometimes he doesn't get the muscle on them and maybe they fall a little bit short or, you know, risk an air ball here. So I think you're going to see him taking these threes more because he was working on those a lot in warmups. And frankly, the past two seasons, though I'm not a believer of his three-point shooting, he certainly has shot at least percentage-wise well in spot-up situations, not creating his own shot. But overall, you know, it's just funny. He's been practicing those. He hits one in the game. Though Coach McMillan definitely said, you know, if he's taking those long threes a lot in the game, these guys are all going to be fired coaches, and that's not what they want. Okay, the bad, and there's a lot of it, and I'm not sure what to make of it yet. I actually believe very much in the good that we saw last night with the Pelicans' core four guys of Rondo, Davis, Cousins, and Holiday playing very well, and the ball movement, all of that. That seems like it's easy to keep up. The bad is where I'm a little bit concerned, and I'm not sure how concerned I think we need to be. At the start of the third quarter, that Pelicans offense kind of vanished a little bit, and I don't know if maybe those guys were tired from playing extensive minutes. Again, these guys played 30-plus minutes in three quarters. That is a lot, especially for your first real game where maybe their legs got a little bit tired and the energy level dipped. But the ball movement in the third quarter started to kind of dwindle. The pace dropped and they were settling for half-court sets. That's not what this team wants to do. You saw in the first half how they can play in transition and turn defense into offense, whether it's a block from Davis or Cousins or Drew Holiday blocking his brother Justin Holiday, which was savage and awesome, gets turned into easy transition points for the Pelicans. That kind of all started to go away. They settled for half-court sets, waiting for the first actions or so, or to get a shot off late in the shot clock, which goes against kind of their principles. It also was, like I said, the ball movement kind of dropped. There was a lot more reliance on isolation, which we all know is really sometimes not the best thing to do. Davis and Cousins can drive, Holiday can drive, but overall, this team's built with their pieces to pass the ball around and create open shots and not try and take your man one-on-one unless it's a good situation for Cousins or Davis to do so. Everyone was settling for more isolations during that time, and it allowed the Bulls to go out on a 22-7 run, and that's just not what they want to do. Basically, the Bulls dictated everything at that point. And you've got to wonder, again, if it's just maybe it had to do with minutes, the rotations being off, what have you. Or maybe they're just simply trying out some different things to get some guys some ISO reps. But certainly that wasn't what you wanted to see, and it was a departure from the really good offense we saw in the first half, and is what really started the Bulls on their kind of run to win this game. And who cares about the wins or losses? It's preseason. So I'm not here going to be saying one of the bad things are the Bulls won the game and the Pels blew a lead. That's not it. It's how the team played during that. If they revert to stretches where it's kind of iso ball, this is going to be the bad offense we've seen the past couple of years. So hopefully the coaches get in the film room, see this, and are able to talk to the players about it in practice over the next couple of days. The other bad, though, and this is somewhat surprising, but not necessarily entirely surprising, it is the first preseason game. It's the first time you're going up against an offense and a team that you haven't been playing every single day in practice in your backups or reserves or mixed up units. But there was a lot of miscommunication on defense, and this is something the Pelicans didn't have last season. Certainly, the loss of Solomon Hill, their best perimeter defender, is an impact in this regard. He was a guy who would talk. He was able to guard multiple positions. So if you were going up and all of a sudden there's a screen set and you're not sure if you should switch or not, if you knew it was Solomon Hill over there, you're likely switching because he can guard multiple positions. They lose some of that positional versatility on defense right now. And maybe these guys just don't know where to switch or not. And all of a sudden, it's a miscommunication. And it was like, I thought you had it or you were supposed to have it. And they're kind of talking to each other, pointing fingers. not what you want to see. But again, first preseason game, first time you're seeing different offense, different players, makes a little bit of sense. What's not great and what shouldn't have been okay is not the miscommunication, but the bad rotations on help defense and secondary defenders by the Pelicans. If there was a drive, they did a good job on that first rotation over to cut off the drive to the rim and try and contest that. But then when that guy passed out, there was someone open almost every single time. In the first quarter, I think I counted 5 or 6 times. This alone led to a wide open 3-point attempt where, yeah, you had the first rotation, but then who's supposed to rotate over to cover that guy? And the Pelicans did not do a good job of that. The Chicago Bulls were not a good 3-point shooting team last season. They took 23 3-pointers in the first half of last night's game. Now, that number's bound to go up by losing Rondo and Dwayne Wade and, to an extent, Jimmy Butler. But certainly, most of those 3-point attempts were wide open. The Bulls hit 10 of them. They shot 43.5% from 3 in the first quarter. Not good. Not what the Pelicans want to do. This is something worth keeping an eye on going forward. Does this keep happening, or does this defense start to tighten up? They were top 10 defense last season. This team still wants to improve. Gentry said the goal is to get into the top 5 on offense. You're not going to do that if you're allowing that many wide open threes after bad rotations, second rotations, really. You know, right now, 3-point shooting's in vogue in the league. If you try and play the Warriors, it simply becomes like a math equation at a certain point, to be honest. If they're hitting a lot of threes and you're not hitting a lot of threes, you're going to have a tough time winning no matter how good your defense is. We saw this every time Memphis matched up against them in the playoffs. You thought maybe Memphis and their grit and grind style would take the Warriors out of this. Then the Warriors hit a bunch of threes and they run away with games because Memphis doesn't. While we saw good 3-point shooting for the Pels last night, I don't know if that's necessarily going to keep up from some of these guys. The spacing's good, but then you also do need to hit threes. They hit 6 in the first half last night on 14 attempts, which is a good percentage. So it gives you a lot of hope that maybe overall this team will be okay there, but the volume might need to get a little bit higher, and you've got to wonder if the makes are going to fall from that. But the bigger thing, like I said, is the perimeter defense and the lack of Solomon Hill, the miscommunication. All of that can be worked on, but the Pels now really only have 2 more games to get that done. So overall, top to bottom, this game is kind of what you want to make of it. There was a lot of good, especially on the offensive side of the ball, which we haven't seen. You know, you can make a lot of this and say, well, they blew this lead. It's terrible. Pels starters didn't play in the fourth quarter. That's really when the Bulls got right back in it. They started to in the third quarter when the offense kind of stagnated. But had the Pels been playing proper rotations, different things like that, this probably isn't the actual outcome of the game. And I think it's okay. And there was, like I said, very good offensive flow from the Pelicans. 69 points in the first half is absolutely tremendous. But on the flip side, as I talked about in the second half of the podcast, that defense looks a little worrisome. And you've got to wonder if the Solomon Hill injury is going to be a bigger deal than we thought. You know, Dante Cunningham only played 15 minutes. That could have something to do with it as well. We still just don't have enough to get a read on this team yet, which means a lot of different takes are kind of going to be thrown out, and all of them are valid. But certainly it's going to take the rest of the preseason to kind of have an idea of what this team is going to be like this coming year. So that's going to do it for this edition of Locked On Pelicans. Don't forget, rate the podcast on iTunes for me. It takes a second. It keeps this thing free for you guys 5 days a week. No paywall, no locked out content, no Patreon trying to make me some extra money. Just do me a favor and like it on iTunes. Subscribe to it on iTunes or Audioboom, wherever you get your podcast from. And please like it on social media. Just give a like to Locked On Pelicans on Facebook. Follow it on social media at Locked On Pels. That actually makes a big difference. So I hope you all please go out and do it. It takes like 10 seconds. Come on now. So thank you all for listening. I'm your host, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter. Basketball is back. It's fun to talk about on-court productions and things we've seen. Going to have more to take away from this game in tomorrow's edition. Preview the next couple of games coming up and just get you guys all set for the regular season, because that is coming right around the corner. So thank you all for listening, and I'll be back with you all tomorrow.